Technorama episode 573, Home Run! Hello and welcome to Technorama. This is a show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, thank you. Welcome. We are on episode 573, so it's you got a little catching up to do. If you're returning,
we're
half, welcome.
Hey, we're halfway there.
Well, at least halfway. Maybe halfway there. We're halfway over the hill. If you're returning, welcome back. Thank you for giving us your time one more time. I'm Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. And joining me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm a little sunburnt.
A little sunburnt. Oh, yeah, you are a little pink. I should have done turn up the red filter on my camera. I can look sunburned with you.
I think I sprayed one side of me, but I think I forgot the other side.
You went to Myrtle Beach?
Went to Myrtle Beach, floated around in a lazy river thing, and, of course, my chest and everything was facing the sun, and I think I forgot to spray the front.
Oops. So,
a little Oops. Burnt. That's Oops. All right. Hey, I've had worse burns, so I can deal with it.
We have we have some feedback. We
what?
Need to do this. Yes. Let's do this. We have a voicemail.
All right.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N,
O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z. We try them and pull one out.
That's it. I'm out of here.
Let's find out what you got to say.
30 years together. This is getting really scary now.
Yeah. I'm surprised Donna's not throwing down her headphones. I'm out of here.
Yeah, she left. We have a voicemail for us, and let us play that. Huh?
Huh? What?
Where'd it go? Hey. Hey? All right. Whatever that was.
The business office of BJO Global, a leading provider of orthopedic bracing and bone stimulation products.
Oh, good.
Calling regarding services for Elizabeth Raymond. Please ask Elizabeth to call us at 1-888-225-4398 and select option 3.
Hey,
our automated
our listeners are now putting our voice number on their applications. Yes, I listen to a podcast, so I'm going to use their voice number. So that way I'll remember, because I never answer numbers. Yeah, whatever. I never answer calls that I don't recognize. So why don't I steer towards a podcast that I do listen to, and then when I listen to that podcast, I'll be sure to get the message.
Yeah, I'll let them filter it for me.
That's a great idea. Wish I had thought of that first. Oh, wait, I did.
I got an idea.
Elizabeth?
Raymond, please ask Elizabeth to call.
All right, it just kind of repeats, doesn't it?
Hey, we should do a podcast. Remember we talked about the Jolly Roger thing where they were they were taking phone calls for people and telemarketers?
Mm-hmm.
We should do that and just make a podcast out of it. Just forward your number, your calls all to the voicemail line.
Right. And I think that would get old really fast.
Yeah. It'd be fun like the first day and then,
after
about 2 hours.
We'll have season one, episode one, and that'll be it.
Thank you. Good night.
The one of the shortest podcasts ever. Okay. We also asked you last week on the show, who's your favorite geek/nerd, idol, or hero? Put that into Facebook recently. Mike Will says, Adam Savage.
That's a good one.
Brian Lupke, who I worked with some 30 years ago, said Chuck Tomasi. Got a lot of laughs. Scott Tyler says Gary Gygax. Hey,
I'm going to add a laugh to it right now. There.
There, yeah. We got four laughs and a thumbs up. It's wonderful. Right. Scott Tyler says Gary Gygax. Joel McLaughlin says Neil Armstrong. Is that geeky enough? Absolutely. Even my brother-in-law Fred says me. We had no idea this was going to happen. Craig makes up the questions. I just post them. Okay. Yeah. Nate Welch says MacGyver. Hey, we didn't say that to be a real person or a fictitious person.
No, I guess not. No.
Gary Lindro says, besides you, Chuck, William Shatner. Craig, I think you should have posted the question. You might have got some people voting for you.
I should have, but I was incognito this weekend. So
Weber Baker says, tough one. So many. James Burke of the TV series Connections. Oh, loved Connections. And two and three. Oh,
okay.
That was a good one. Let's see. Melissa Bartell replied back.
That she loved him.
Loved him. Have some of his
James Burke.
Don Wenzel says Kevin Smith. Ben Stein is the vote from Lone Guy's Night. Mark Letha, old high school buddy, says, why you, Chuck? Always impressed with your knowledge of computers you possess, even at a high school level.
Come on. That's an easy one. They replied to your post.
I still have a high school level possession of... No, I still possess my high school computers.
Yeah.
Charlotte Riddle Kennedy says, John Barrowman. Nice.
Okay. Yeah.
My sister-in-law, Fawn Guys, voted for her husband, Matt, which was nice of her. Melissa Bartell comes back with her own, says, can I be my own geek icon? Absolutely. If not, then Nutty Nuchas, if I were talking non-celebs. And otherwise, John Barrowman, because he does everything from a place of kindness. John Miller Jr. says, Bill Nye, his appearance on Last Week Tonight with John Oliver about global warming was epic. Be warned. NSFW rant by Bill Nye. Ooh, I want to see Bill Nye do an NSFW piece. That's something you don't see every day. Byron Dupler puts in the brain from Pinky and the Brain. Just a picture.
That'll work.
That'll work. April Stewart says Steve Carell in The 40-Year-Old Virgin and Ben Stiller in Night at the Museum. Bob Alexander, who used to work with us a long time ago at ServiceNow, says, you are. Roy Atkinson says, Vint Cerf. I don't know. I don't recognize that name. Do you?
What? Yeah. He invented the World Wide Web.
What?
Vint Cerf.
Are you sure about that?
Cerf is the Internet Hall of Fame. He is American Internet pioneer that recognized as one of the fathers of the Internet, sharing his title with TCPIP co-inventor Bob Kahn.
Okay. That Vint Cerf.
He works with Google now on several things.
I thought you were talking about Tim Berners-Lee, but that's Mr. WWW, not Mr. Internet.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Nutty says, is it okay if your geek hero USA fictional comic book character, I think that should be is a fictional comic book, because real life people might let me down.
Well, at least you can write them however you want it. Okay.
Sean McClain says Chris Knight. Mike Stockman says you, then Wozniak. Wow. Okay.
Whoa. Okay. Yeah.
Dan Slaughter. I like his answer. James Donovan Halliday. From Ready Player One?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Nice. We will have another question at the end of the show.
Who was yours?
Mine was... Oh, I thought I had one last week. Now I'm trying to remember what it was. Nerd, idol, or hero? It's probably a toss-up, but I'd have to say it's the people who got me into computers early on in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. Sort of nurtured me and showed me the way. There's a couple of people that stand out, but it would probably be Mr. Richard Balding, who was my first high school computers teacher and allowed me to stay after school in the computer room when we only had two computers in the computer room.
Right.
And you know, experiment and try and type in the programs from the book. So,
hey, is that back when you had to schedule time on the mainframe?
No, that was... Hey, don't make me shake my punch cards at you.
Right.
Man shakes fist at punch cards.
Yeah. I'd have to say mine is... I got two of them because Douglas Adams, and I like the way he thinks. Just his thought process, especially going through... Some of the, you know, you read the stories, you can kind of see where some of the absurdity leads to some logic. I like that. Also,
there were a lot of good answers in there. I mean, I agree with many of them, like Adam Savage.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I tell you what, well, my other one, like real life, you know, I think are heroes is Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong, and Michael Collins. I think all three of them.
I'd say all the astronauts, you know, not to.
Well, yeah, I know. But I mean, to think. Going to the moon the first time and having, you know, not like freaking out when you finally get there or, you know, just keep a cool mind and go through the process, get on there and then You're just doing what you got to do.
Speaking of which, did you see the special?
Take some chutzpah.
Speaking of astronauts, did you see the special? I think it's on Netflix called Last Man on the Moon, the story of Eugene Cernan.
No.
Watch that. It was filmed about 5 years ago because it was after 2012, and I believe he passed away in 2016. So
yeah, I think it was. I do remember. I knew him, and I knew he died recently.
It's a great story, and he gives some insights to the astronaut's life, and he goes to his old house in Cocoa Beach, and goes, hey, you know, right over there is where Michael Collins lived, and over in that house, you know, we were all in the same neighborhood, a bunch of houses together, and the wives would hang out because the guys were gone, you know, 7.5 days out of 7.
Right.
And he said something like within a few years, within 10 years, most of them were divorced because the marriages just couldn't hold up under that strain.
Oh, wow.
And it was really, really sad in a way because he was always out for his glory and his family always came second. And now that he's a real old man, he says, you know, I think I've finally recognized that. Dude, he had 2 more years to live after this show was made. So I hope we got the most out of it, but a little late. So,
yeah.
You know, the life of the astronauts wasn't all ticker tape parades and walking on the moon.
No, I guess not. Well, you know, you go through that. You sacrifice a lot of personal time.
It almost reminded me of being a soldier. Happen. You know, you're stationed away from your family. You get to see them maybe sporadically. There's a strain on the family, PTSD in a way. You know, some of these astronauts, it was, go watch that. It's called The Last Man on the Moon, if you haven't seen that already. Okay. Are we ready to move on? We spent a lot of time doing our feedback.
Let's do it.
And no singing about letters anymore. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, whatever you want.
I forgot to mention, you're also a hero. Chuck.
Thanks, Craig. You're my hero too. You fix all my computer problems.
See, I'm the man behind the curtain.
On this day in history for August 14th, 2019, because that's when we plan to release this audio and video. This is the 226th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 139 days remaining in 2019. It was on this date in 1457 that publication of the Mons Psalter, the first book to feature a printed date of publication and a printed colophon. Go look it up, kids, if you don't know what a colophon is. It's not something you have to get examined by your doctor after you get to be 50.
It's something we used to play records on. On August 14th, 1895, Japan's first patent is issued to the inventor of the rust-proof paint, inventor not stated.
He invented rust-proof paint. Go look it up, kids.
Yeah.
Rust-Oleum salutes you, Mr. Anonymous Japanese inventor. It was on this date in 1888, an audio recording of the English composer Arthur Sullivan's The Lost Chord. I picture some guy jamming out on a guitar. It's one of the first recordings of music ever made. It's played during a press conference introducing Thomas Edison's phonograph in London, England. They needed something a little more impressive. I know how this goes. The marketing team says, we need something a little more compelling than, well, we had a little lamb.
And it's something more reliable than the colophon. It was 126 years ago today that France becomes the first country to introduce motor vehicle registration. Thanks, France.
Imagine if the officer pulled up next to you for speeding and he did not ask you for your vehicle license and registration, or your license and vehicle registration. He would just say, can I see your license? Not to say that it's your vehicle. 118 years ago today, the first claimed power flight by Gustav Whitehead in his number 21. Makes you wonder what happened to numbers 0 through 20.
That's right. That same day in 1935, Franklin D. Roosevelt signs the Social Security Act, creating government pension system for the retired.
Thank you, Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Appreciate it.
I hope it's still around when I get to be retired. It might do me some good.
The race is on.
Never planned on it, so I've always saved my own pennies. Also, on August 14, 1959, founding and first official meeting of the American Football League, 1959, AFL.
And it was on this date in 1975 that the Rocky Horror Picture Show, the longest running release in film history, opens in London to extend its release.
I wonder if everybody went in costume to that one.
Probably, well, maybe.
And
I
then
don't know.
Sang along and danced. No, that's
it's
not
1975,
how it goes.
You know.
Let's do the time warp again. Happy birthday goes out on this date to Italian mathematician and physicist Giambattista Benedetti.
Benedetti.
He was born on this date in 1530.
Danish physicist and chemist Hans Christian Ulst was born 242 years ago today.
Is that a null symbol? The O with the slash through it?
Ulst. How do you say that?
Ursted.
Ursted.
Margaret Lindsay Huggins. I need a man to hug and kiss. Anglo-Irish astronomer and author was born on that same date in 1848.
An American dentist and gambler. What a combination. Doc Holliday was born on this date in 1851.
He's okay with me.
I'll be Huckleberry.
Guido Castelnuovo, Italian mathematician and academic, was born on the same date in 1865.
And born August 14th, 1866, Belgian mathematician and academic Charles Jean de la Vella Poussin. I don't know, Poussin. Poussin.
Frank Oppenheimer. The American physicist, yes, that Frank Oppenheimer. He was born 107 years ago today.
And born August 17th, 1914, African-American physicist, chemist, and academic Herman Branson.
Also turning 86 today is Swiss chemist and academic Nobel Prize laureate Richard R. Ernst.
And also born on that same day in 1975, American actor, comedian, musician, producer, and screenwriter Steve, that crazy guy, Martin.
Suddenly, I want to put one of those fake arrows on my head.
You should.
Also turning 69 today is American cartoonist Gary Larson.
Oh, man, I love that guy. American producer, director, and screenwriter Brandon Braga is born on this date in 1965.
Where do I know that name? All right, we'll move on. Also born on the same date in 1966, American model, actress, and producer, Miss World United States 1986, Halle Berry.
Miss World? Is she really? I guess so. American chemist and astronaut Tracy Caldwell Dyson, born on this date in 1969.
All right, let's see if we can get through the listener birthdays. Happy birthday on August 17th, Clive Jevons from Bummenheim, German. Kevin Susie the Geek's son. Wow, something got mashed together here. Our wiki may need some repairs. Brian Litecki on the 19th. Also on the 19th, Matt Ryder, who's the Eagle Scout geek. Good for you. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. And Jedi Kez, a.k.a. Brian from Winnipeg, is on the 20th. Happy birthday to all of you. If you want to be on the birthday calendar, go over to truckchat.com/wiki and we'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year, because that's the way it was on this date for August 14th, 2019. Do it.
I wasn't sure if you were going to go with the, you know, or not, but
we both made a hand gesture at the same time. It just wasn't the same hand.
I'll try harder next time.
We have some news. Let me see. Is this good news or bad news? Or impending news? Or startling news? We need the good startling news.
It wasn't good for Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah.
Good startling news, everyone!
All right. Hordes of Earth's toughest creatures may be now living on the moon. Well, this sounds like a headline worth grabbing your attention, does it not? There might be life on the moon after all. Thousands of virtually indestructible creatures that can withstand extreme radiation, sizzling heat, and the coldest temperatures of the universe, and decades without food. These terrifying sounding beings aren't aliens, but instead microscopic earthlings known as tardigrades. Yay! And then when they get real big, they show up on Discovery and zip around the universe. They're tardigrades who likely made it out alive following a crash landing on lunar surface by Israel's Beersheet probe in April. And the U.S.-based organization responsible for their trip, they said Tuesday. Based on an analysis of the spacecraft's trajectory and composition of device and microanimals stored in, quote, we believe the chances of survival for the tardigrades, dot, 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 are extremely high. Someone had to think about it.
Yeah. There was like, wait for it.
Novak Spivak, co-founder and chairman of the Arch Mission Foundation, told AFP. The nonprofit is dedicated to spreading backups of human knowledge and Earth's biology throughout the solar system. So they did this on purpose.
Yeah.
I thought maybe they were on board by accident because, you know, we don't want to cross-contaminate anything.
Well, you know what? When I read this, I kept thinking, okay, they did this on purpose, but yet NASA spends millions to sterilize, you know, our spacecraft before they send it out.
Because they didn't want... I mean, that's why Cassini was burned up in Saturn's atmosphere rather than crash onto Titan, for example. Because it may have had microbes on board and they didn't want to contaminate
anything.
Because
it was mostly space-based. I don't think they were expecting it to... Yeah, they didn't want to land it somewhere. They probably didn't go through the same sterilization then.
Well, they did, but I'm guessing it's not always 100%. So this was on purpose. Tardigrades are ideal to include because they are microscopic, multicellular, and one of the most durable forms of life on the planet, said Spivak. He added that the diminutive creatures, which are under a millimeter in size, had been dehydrated to place them in suspended animation, then, quote, encased in an epoxy of artificial amber and should be revivable in the future. That sounds very cruel. So we now have tardigrades on the moon.
You know what's going to be terrible is when we send men back to the moon, or women, people, and they walk over a little crater, and then there's like these big tardigrades.
Or they take them back.
They escape the amber.
They bring them back and rehydrate them, and they're really mad.
Yeah. All right. Like tardigrades when they're angry.
That's our one and only news story, so let's do the Hacks and Strange Stories next. Would you care to tell us about this wonderful camera, Mr. Cameraman?
Yes, because I thought this was an interesting little story. So in a breakthrough that will appeal to both spies and those who work in priceless but frail historical documents, researchers at MIT have developed a camera that uses terahertz radiation to peer onto the text pages of books without having to open them. Now, I've got plenty of books here that haven't been cracked in my house. I'm excited about this myself, so I can open them without opening them.
Mm-hmm. Sure, it'll be so quick to read them that way, too.
Yeah, maybe I should read a couple. Anyway, terahertz radiation falls somewhere between microwave and infrared spectrums, and the research team, including Barmak Heshmat, I'm going to have trouble. chose that particular flavor of radiation because of how it reacts with different chemicals. Different chemicals produce a distinct frequency that as they react with different terahertz frequencies, which can be measured and distinguished. In this instance, and you can see a little animated GIF below, it shows researchers how well how to tell the difference between ink and blank paper.
Okay, how do they know what page it's on, though?
I guess maybe intensity. So complex algorithms and software is required to translate the frequencies being bounced back to the camera, allowing it to distinguish letters on a page. But it also relies on how far the short bursts of terahertz radiation is traveling by precisely timing it, how long it actually comes back. So 20 micrometer thick air gaps between pages of a book, it's able to calculate when it moves from page to page.
Okay.
And there's a little video there kind of explaining it too. So I invite you to go check that out. So that's pretty interesting to be able to read a book without opening it.
That animated GIF we had on the screen, it's pretty hallucinogenic.
THZ. What does that mean?
More appropriately, I should say THC.
THC. I can imagine especially when they have books that have maybe gotten wet or something and they can't, I don't know, they can't just open it up and look at it. You could probably potentially scan it with this, I imagine. Get it into Evernote.
He used some OCR on that. It didn't look like it was the fastest process to scan. It's not like running
probably
through
not.
A copy machine.
No, but if you got a book that's maybe real frail, you know, you don't want to, but you want to scan it at the same time, or at least read, see what was in it. Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Very old stuff. If it can read the different inks back then. In our next story, we have a computer system that learned how to read human emotions. Marianne Redden
Then Skynet was born.
Well, no, but they could figure out who the next shooter was going to be. Oh, wait, that sounds too much like The Boys. Yeah. Marianne Redden spent the last 10 years staring at human faces, searching for traces of two distinct but closely related emotions, surprise and fear. After so much time spent studying the intricacies of facial expressions, she can barely tell them apart anymore. That's why Redden, a postdoctoral neuroscience fellow at Stanford University, knew her research was onto something when a machine learning powered system trained to detect emotion successfully distinguished between the two. Redden was impressed to find that the system, known as EmoNet, not to do anything with Emo Phillips, was just looking for facial expressions to make sense of human emotions. It was taking in context clues to determine the overall mood, just like a person would. Quote, if EmoNet can tell surprise and fear apart, it says to me that we're not just picking up the expression on a face, it's learning something important about the actions going on, Redden told the Daily Post. The business of creating the machine learning system, a neural network sourced from many previous existing data sets, took researchers from the University of Colorado Boulder and Duke University a year to develop. First, Redden and her fellow researchers repurposed AlexNet, a deep learning model that enabled computers to recognize objects, not a hot dog, and retrained it to recognize emotions instead of objects, not a hot dog face.
Not a hot dog.
AlexNet was trained to identify various objects by being fed photos of items like chairs and pens and assigning class labels to the images. Redden and other researchers wondered if similar classifications could be done with emotions. This is Darth Vader frightened, Darth Vader happy, Darth Vader.
Hey, you know what I need? I need an app that says, wife, mad or happy. And you just take a picture of your wife and go, you can go, yep, she's mad at me. Mad or not mad.
There you go. It's just a green or red light. Approach or do not approach. We need a simpler UI than that, Craig.
I'm confused. I'm going to go in anyway. Okay.
The phone said red, do not approach, or approach with flowers or candy or something.
Google Maps comes up with the closest flower shop.
or a bus ticket for you.
Mad or not mad?
All right. Hey, we want to give a shout out to the chat room. So let us turn to Facebook and see who is there. We have several people following us tonight. We do the show Sunday nights at 9:30 Eastern time. If you want to follow us, go over to Technorama Podcast on Facebook. Subscribe. Craig Glasner, Michael King, Scott Tyler, you, me, Mary Charleboy, Donna's sister, is on here. Michelle Cook Lopez. Hey, Country Signs is back. Weber Baker. Doug Schultze from work. Uh-oh. Straighten up, fly right. Kevin Wright. Yeah. No relation to KL, right?
Hey, by the way, Doug said he liked my shirt.
Yes. Is that why you wore the tardigrade? Did you wear the shirt for the article or do the article for the shirt?
No, first off, Doug liked my shirt because of, he heads up that, he Discovery. Supports that product in ServiceNow at Disco.
But I get
it's just a disco kind of night.
Disco's dead, man.
I don't know. I think Doug would disagree.
All right. Let's move on to, does that mean Remember When is next? Remember When is next. So.
Yes.
Whoops, that's Media Corner. Try that again. There we are.
Hey,
we got to remember when this actually happened. So, many of you are aware that the Earth's magnetic field flips every once in a while. North becomes south, south becomes north. And we know this.
Cats and dogs live together.
Because of core samples in the Earth through the Atlantic. And as the Atlantic splits apart, it records the Earth's magnetic polarity at that time. So, do you want to read this or shall I continue?
No, go ahead, continue.
All right. So Earth's magnetic field reversal took 3 times longer than previously thought. A new study suggests that the last field reversal, 773,000 years ago, took 22,000 years to occur. I thought it was flipping every 22,000 years, but I'm probably getting it mixed up with precession, which could explain some of the inner workings of our planet's core. Earth's magnetic field is known to flip direction with somewhat unnerving regularity. Magnetic north switches to south and vice versa. This process that drives this change is poorly understood. Scientists know that the last reversal took place about 773,000 years ago. I didn't think it was quite that long ago, but okay, I'll take your word for it. You're smarter than me.
How do they know?
But because it's recorded in the rocks.
Oh, in the rocks, of course. Okay.
But exactly what happens in our planet's core to bring about the change is unknown. A new study, however, could help clarify the underlying cause because it suggests that the reversal takes much longer than we thought. The findings, well, it's nice to know that won't just happen overnight, but that is a long time. The findings have potential implications for humanity during the next flip. Set your calendars. In the paper published today, Science Advances, Brad Singer of the University of Wisconsin-Madison and his colleagues calculated that the Earth's last magnetic field reversal took roughly 22,000 years. Previous studies have estimated the phenomenon lasts anywhere from 4,000 to 9,000 years. The new number implies the switch is more tumultuous event than we thought. The reversal process is way more complicated, and it lasted longer in our estimation, Singer said. Our study points to a more protracted and complex process for driving and propelling a geomagnetic field reversal. I kind of wonder if this happens on any other planets. Kind of weird.
I imagine so. Anything with a molten core
that generates a magnetic field, maybe. Yeah. But we can't go sample the core or the surface of Jupiter or Saturn.
Not really.
So to make this calculation, the team used data from an array of sources that hold historical information about the Earth's previous magnetic switch, known as the Matsuyama-Brunhess reversal. Well, there's a trivia question for you. Take that, Alex Trebek. One piece of evidence was lava flows, which act as a time capsule because their iron-rich minerals align with the direction of the magnetic field when the lava hardens. See? Researchers can examine isotopes of argon within the lava flows that date them and draw a clear picture of the activity of the magnetic field at a specific point in time. So I told you about the Mid-Atlantic Ridge and how it's constantly creating new surface. As that lava comes out and forms and it hardens, you've got a recording of was north up or north down the time.
Yeah.
So they've done these magnetic studies and taken these core samples across the ocean floor, and they see these sort of parallel lines going out from the mid-oceanic ridge, and they color-coded north being north as, like, white, and north being south as black, and you see these bands of white, black, going out from the mid-oceanic ridge. It's very compelling information.
You know, I bet this was difficult to ascertain what they were even looking at. The first time they... looking at this stuff,
it's like
somebody goes, wait a minute,
all whacked out.
Yeah, wait a minute, you know, and somebody just kind of figures it out. That's just, to me, that's amazing. It's it's up there with, you know, who ate the tomato first.
Oh, it's right up there with our theories on how the moon formed. You know, when you realize it's made up of the same stuff as the Earth, you go, well, how did that happen? What are the theories that could make that happen?
So, like I said, it's one of those things, like I said, about tomatoes. It's like they used to think tomatoes were poisonous.
Right.
Who was the first one that decided, I'm going in.
I need a sandwich.
Yeah, there you go. They pulled out their app and poisonous or not, I'm going in.
No, but I think one of the most fascinating things about science is discovering that, hey, the theory of yesterday doesn't work with the data we're finding today. And we've got more sophisticated...
Or even as simpler than that is to realize that there is a record of this. And as you said, it's in the iron, the molten iron that's come out.
It's not about having the answers. It's about asking the questions. That's what I love about it.
Yeah. So, I saw Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I know how that works.
I listened to Dr. Carl on Triple J. Let's do our patron music. There it is.
Yeah.
So thank you, patrons. This show is brought to you by you. If you want to become a patron, go over to patreon.com/technoramapodcast. And for as little as a dollar a show, you can upset the delicate balance we have on this 4x6 table and start driving Craig crazy again.
Yeah, no. Yes, no, yes, no.
Yes, yes, no, yes. All right, why did you just bold John Noble?
Just go ahead, just okay. go ahead.
Let's
go
ahead. You put an and put an asterisk on him.
Yeah, now we'll get to it in a second.
There's no asterisk down below. That means I've got aster exasperation.
Well, get it. Go.
Okay. We thank you all. Kyle Nishioka, Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, Mega Podtastic, Night Gig Studios. Thank you very much, Gary Lindros and John Clifford. Thank you, Leon. Thank you, John Noble.
Oh, that John Noble?
That's yes. Although, if you're watching Elementary...
That's what the asterisk was for, by the way.
That's all it's for?
Yeah.
Chris MC? That Chris MC? Yes, that yeah. Chris MC. Alexis Duran? That Alexis Duran? We could do this all night.
Yeah.
Saturday Morning Media. Steve Therian. Jorgis Rowan. John Miller Jr. Amber Elstad. Thank you, Harold McKinstry. Thank you, Amy Bowen. Thank you, Denise Inglis. Stephen Weshey.
Wishy.
There, thank you. Thank you, Dean Jensen. Thank you, Dandy Man. And thank you, NCAF1. We appreciate all of you because Donna dug up all the bills for the lessons we started doing the Patreon stuff. And now we can actually afford software upgrades we did a couple years ago.
We can finally get that new version of Notepad.
MS Paint.
That's funny.
We did an article on somebody that was very talented with MS Paint. So not only do you get your name in a shout out on the show, but you also get special content that is recorded right after the show just for our Patreon people. So that's what you get. We have a thank you gift. That's our tote bag, if you will.
Yes.
That didn't sound right at all.
Here's your free gift, sir. Thank you for coming. Oh,
it's your Walmart sticker.
Walmart sticker.
Right. All right. We have another great mystery from the Geek Library. Take it away. Oh, should we do the Geek Library thing?
Yeah, I was waiting for the music.
Where's the music? There it is. Almost lost it. Thank you, Dave Dorman, theme number one, .mp3.wave. Right. So speaking of, it says mp3.wave. What is that?
Is that what it's called?
That's Dave Dorman, theme one, .mp3.wave.
Okay. Maybe we should fix that. Anyway, so, you know, we talked about other uses of AI earlier in the show. And how about this one? Mysterious ancient radio signals keep pelting the Earth. Astronomers designed an AI to hunt them down.
So that was appropriate that we played this extraterrestrial kind of music.
Exactly.
We could do this one too.
Yeah.
Men in Black kind of thing.
All right. The sudden shrieks of radio waves from deep space slamming to our radio telescopes on Earth. Splattering. Excuse me, instruments. I'm sorry, splattering. That was just a bug on the antenna. All right, they were spattering those instruments, instruments detectors with confusing data. And now astronomers are using artificial intelligence to pinpoint the sources of the shrieks in hopes of explaining what's sending them to Earth.
That animated GIF looks like paparazzi from the universe.
Yeah, they're taking pictures of it. Yeah.
There they are. It's the Earthlings in their natural state.
All right. So usually these weird unexplained signals are detected only after the fact when astronomers notice an out-of-place spike in their data, sometimes years after the incident. But the signals have complex, mysterious structures, patterns, peaks, and valleys in radio waves that play out in just milliseconds. That's not the sort of signal astronomers expect to come from simple explosion or one of the standard events known as scatter spikes of electromagnetic energy across space.
It's not gamma ray bursts? It's not a gamma ray burst?
Those would be, you're talking about like from stars, like pulsars, and be able to, those kind of things would be predictable. You want to find the stuff that's not.
Okay.
So ever since the first one was discovered in 2007 using data recorded in 2001, there have been ongoing effort to pin down their source, but FRBs arrive at random times and places, and existing human technology and observation methods aren't well primed to spot these signals. So now, in a paper published on July 4th in the Journal of Monthly Notices of the Royal Astronomical Society, a team of astronomers wrote that they managed to detect 5 FRBs in real time, which I think is interesting, using a radio telescope. So FARA's system, I'm going to skip down a little bit, trained the Malagongalo telescope to spot the FRBs and switch over to its most detailed recording mode, producing the finest records of FRBs yet. Based on their data, the researchers predicted that between 59 and 157 theoretical detected FRBs splash across our skies every day. The scientists used them, also used immediate detection, to hunt for related flares in data from X-ray, optical, and other radio telescopes, I guess interference maybe, in hopes of finding some visible event to the linked to the FRBs, but had no luck. The research showed, however, that one of the most peculiar and frustrating for researching purposes traits of FRBs appears to be real. The signals once arriving never repeat themselves. Each one appears to be a singular event in space that will never happen again. So that's why it's important to get something to identify. You know, people, you know, they're listening to these signals all day long, just like the lady was talking about looking at all the emotions in the other article and not really being able to differentiate them because they saw so much. But you can use an AI that doesn't tire and is able to just sit there and not bore.
Oh,
and
keep those computers, they'll work all day.
I know. Until they revolt, and then we'll have a big mess on our hands.
Then they want a 5-day work week.
Yeah.
40-hour work week, 8 hours
and
a day.
And they want to raise the minimum wage, and they want this, and they want that.
Insurance for the kids.
If I'm right, I'm going to write a children's book. If you give a robot a pancake.
If you give a robot a stylus. We came up with a new holiday in Phoenix. One of the neighbors. Oh, yeah. The guy who was running. What was he running for? Congress? He came over and said, hey, Monday we're going to be starting. We're going to have roofers starting on our house at 6 a.m. So just letting you know in case it's noisy, in case there's something in the way. I said, oh, okay. Well, good time of year to start. Mid-August. Nice and hot.
So yeah.
He said, well, you know, I see mid-August as telling me there's 6 more weeks of summer. I said, Doug, we have to make a new holiday in Phoenix. We hold up the rattlesnake, and if he sees his shadow, there's 6 more weeks of hot weather.
Break out your top hats.
Hey,
yeah. You hold the rattlesnake.
The local Chase Bank came up with not snow globes. They came up with haboob globes.
Haboob?
It's just instead of white snowflakes that fly around in the snow globe, it's brown sand. And it's got a little cactus in there and whatnot. It makes a little sandstorm. It's a haboob globe.
Haboob globe.
I love it. So why can't we have, you know, rattlesnake? If there's Groundhog's Day, we need something else.
You need to go outside and do that tomorrow, and then
I'm not holding up a rattlesnake.
We'll report back. Chuck, how many people showed up? There were tens of us.
I'm not holding up a rattlesnake. I need something a little safer to hold up.
Just get a fake rubber one.
A fake rubber snake. Did the fake rubber snake? Yeah. Reach in the dark hole under the rock and pull the snake out.
Yeah, I got one.
I'm gonna pass out. But I mean, and it's so sunny out here in August. He's going to see his shadow. So, yes, we have a new, probably not a rattlesnake day. What could we make that?
Well,
is there anything safe in this area to pick up? Not really. I think that's scorpion. The reason why we don't have this holiday.
Can the scorpion see a shadow?
I'm not picking up a scorpion, nor a wolf spider, nor a coyote.
Hey, listener, if you have a suggestion
of something Chuck should pick up to see if it sees its shadow, a hyrax? Right. Oh, no, a little prairie dog. We have rabbits. We have jackrabbits.
Prairie Dog Day. There you go.
Prairie Dog like Day it. Instead of Groundhog Day. Desert Prairie yeah. Dog Day.
I'm not sticking my hand in that hole either.
It's in a. It'll be in a cage.
Okay.
Should we get on with our question of the week and then get out of here?
Yes, let's move on. Right. Yes, let's move
well,
on.
Well, we dwelt on that bad topic for a while. And, oh, king snakes are safe. Thank you, Michael King.
You know what?
Get it?
No snakes aren't safe. I don't care what you say.
I actually did pick up a king snake. He fell in the pool. I picked him up and threw him out. Just a little bitty one, though.
You know what? Maybe you should just go for like a bottle of tequila. Do you have to do an animal?
Scott Tyler says a javelina. I'm not picking up a javelina. Sorry. Okay. Question of the week. What was that toy that you just couldn't live without as a kid? This is when we're going to find out how old some of our listeners are. Because if they say, you know, like a Game Boy or Lincoln Logs.
Hey, what? I saved up some money and actually won a contest and got like $20. I used that in a little bit of money I saved. And it's probably one of my favorite ships that I bought. I loved all my Star Wars toys, the action figures, but it was the Snowspeeder from Hoth, you know, the one they used on Hoth.
Mm-hmm.
That I bought the toy. I saw it and I had the X-Wing and the TIE Fighter. I had to have that Snowspeeder.
You didn't have any snow.
No, I lived in Texas at the time. There was like hardly any ever snow.
Right. So you imagined snow.
That's right.
Or did you carve up a bar of soap and make fake soap snow?
Poor Han and Luke, they were in the Hoth outfits, you know, as I was playing with them, and they were outside in this heat of Texas. So
I used up all of Dad's shaving cream to make the snow.
No, my dad, if you knew my dad, he's had a beard since he was born. So. He's probably used one can in his whole life.
He's up all mom's Cool Whip.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So that's our question of the week, and we are going to get out of here. Thank you for joining us again. A little shorter this time. I think we only had like 5 articles. But
thanks for joining me, Chuck. I appreciate it.
Thanks for hanging out for a while once again, Craig. And thank you, dear viewer and listener, for hanging out with us. Any closing comments? Nope. Still javelina time. For Scott Tyler. And that brings us to the end of the show, where we want to encourage you, see if I can find the music, want to encourage you to call our listener line, unlike that lady who was selling us bone-stimulating things.
We are getting older.
707-530-2428. Have you called your mom lately? Have you called Technorama lately? Make sure you do one of those this week, and preferably us.
Yeah.
707-530-CHAT or send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. Leave us a comment on the Technorama podcast page on Facebook or any of the other links that you find on our page over at chuckchat.com/technorama. And if you want to be a patron, don't forget patreon.com/technoramapodcast is where you can go for that. Make sure you put your birthday on the wiki too, chuckchat.com/wiki. We'd love to see you there. And hopefully we'll see Brian Brown next week. He wasn't feeling all that well tonight. So we wish him all the best. Craig, give us the usual sign out with the binary high five.
All right. 101, everybody. See you soon.
Bye.